Good afternoon and welcome to Creating and Sustaining an Effective PMO, Challenges and Lessons Learned. And my name is Eric Zemaitis and I'm the convener, and I want to remind everyone that this is being broadcast both in the online and the obviously the on-ground conference. Please remember to complete your online surveys. And with that, I will turn it over to, and I couldn't resist saying this today, what is in reality probably the true Philadelphia dream team here. So, a Giants fan, I had to get that in.
Thank you, Eric, and welcome. As this demographic slide will give you a little background on our institutions, I'd like to go ahead and introduce ourselves in the order that we're going to be speaking. My name's Allison Cruz. I'm with the University of North Florida. And then we're going to have Kelly Anderson with Carnegie Mellon University. And then we're going to have Phil Neufeld, he's down over here on my right, with California State University, Fresno. And then we're going to have Robin Betts at Babson College. And then Dwayne Campbell down here on the right with Pasadena City College. And our person to wrap everything up for us before our Q&A is going to be Jane Bashan, and she's with the University of Connecticut. And as you can see from the slide that's on the screen now, you're going to notice that four institutions are public, two are private, two institutions are fairly large, three are medium size, one small, two institutions have only one resource with their project management office, others range from 3 to 8 staff. Four institutions have no funding, while two have a significant budget. The use of tools varies, but 5 of the 6 use Microsoft Project and 3 use SharePoint. Now to kick off our presentation, I wanted to tell you our goal. Our goal for this presentation is to give you different perspectives on starting, defining, supporting, and structuring a project management office from 6 unique institutions. We're also going to discuss the challenges you face when starting a PMO and advice for getting started. You're going to hear some different threads and similar threads, and some things are going to be repeated. So how do you get a PMO started? Well, first of all, let's talk about why. We wanted to gather information about projects that were currently underway and report on their progress. We wanted more structure and a standards-driven way to run projects and meet our goals. We were experiencing problems with projects not finishing at the expected time, not costing or costing more than what we expected, and finishing with different results than what we communicated. The same staff resources were required for multiple projects. There was lack of agreement on which project should take priority. Units or IT departments were not coordinating with each other as they planned their projects. There was no formalized way to communicate with stakeholders about the project queue. No one but IT knew what else was being asked for around the campus. IT was the black hole. At the University of North Florida, we wanted to know how much time we spent on projects. So our initial goal was to implement time tracking. Our approach to getting started was varied in that we had different timelines, budgets, and priorities, but these common threads existed. We developed and introduced a standardized process. Leadership communicated the process. Our guiding ideas were just enough project management and meet the people where they are. We determined the criteria for project prioritization and involved our stakeholders in prioritizing. We created a reporting mechanism for determining a project status, and we acknowledged results from good practice and conducted training to reinforce these practices. As this comic depicts, with regards to starting formalized project management, it's important to Know the problem that you're trying to solve. Begin with the end in mind. Know the context or situation, and shape your solution to your environment, not the other way around.
Thanks, Allison. Again, I'm Kelly Anderson. I'm from Carnegie Mellon University. Thanks for coming to our presentation here. My part here is to talk about how we define our PMO services or the PMO service level agreement. In other words, what are you going to get if you engage with the PMO at your university or your school? So our approach to trying to figure out how do we talk about six different schools in this short amount of time is that we said, okay, well, let's ask six questions, and we'll all answer them, and we'll see what we get. So the question that I kind of tackled was, okay, what services are we providing? And we put together this. So as you can see from this slide, we have all of us are providing developing PM processes or methodologies. So we're all doing that. Not all of us are doing project management. That's one thing to note. A lot of us are actually out there managing projects, but there are some of us who just support people who are doing projects that are embedded in our organizations. I think another thing to note about this slide is there are 14 different services here that we are providing. Now, note that we're not all providing the same services. We're not all providing all 14 services. But the idea of tailoring your PMO to your organization, I think, comes out clearly here. Because all of us are doing something slightly different. And it also made me think about, as I was listening this morning to Seth Godin talk, he talked about doing more and more and more, right? He was saying we get caught up in trying to do more. And I think that that's one lesson to learn is you don't have to do all 14, right? You pick and choose. You pick and choose based on the goals for your organization what is going to work best. And I think that that's where, again, going to Seth's talk, the art in creating your PMO comes from, because you are creating something new. Even though other people may have a PMO, your PMO is going to be unique to your university and your organization. And that's where the art comes in. So back to the SLA. A couple of us have really, we have dived closer, deeper into the project management service. And what we've done is, at Carnegie Mellon, is we've tried to talk about our levels of service. Okay, so when you have a PMO project manager come and work on your project, what are they going to do? So this is the best way I could explain this to you. Show you this chart. What we've done is we've said, okay, we provide five different project management specific services. There's self-help, where we have information on our website that you can go and look at. There's consulting. Oh, by the way, the self-help, do not underestimate how much time it takes you to go and build that and then keep updating it, right? That is work for the PMO to do. Consulting, so this is where PM would just come and once a month or so sit down and say, how's your project going? Let me give you some ideas about how you might do that differently. In-depth planning, so this is where a PM would come and say, okay, just for that planning phase when you're trying to understand exactly what your project is going to do and when you're going to do it and who's going to do it, we'll come and help you with that. But once you get to execution phase, you're on your way. Formal mentoring, so that's kind of like consulting, but it's on a more regular basis. And then full project management, that's when we take over. We come in and say, we are going to be the project manager on this project. So we said, okay, we're going to classify projects by the impact on the university, and there can be internal impact or intra-directorate or cross-directed or external customer, all this kind of levels of impact. We've said there are resources. Are the resources high, moderate, or low? Experience. Okay, if it's not the PM who's doing it, then who is going to do it and how much experience do they have with this type of project? That's going to be a factor. And then we have strategic. So how strategic is this project to the overall goals of the university? And then based on that, you go over and you say, okay, what's the complexity of the project? So you kind of go over with, okay, I have a high resource need and a low project complexity, so it's going to fall kind of in the in-depth planning area. And that's what I'm going to have to, that's the type of service that I'm going to get from a PM. So that's one of the ways that we've done. We mostly use this for internally trying to figure out where our PM resources will go for which projects. And it's been helpful in trying to explain our thinking as we assign a PM to a project. I'm now going to turn it over to Phil, who's going to talk about structure and support.
Thanks, Kelly. I'm going to share some of our experience with structure, systems, and support infrastructure. So first of all, some observations. Structure varies within our organizations and probably within yours based on several things. Staffing levels in terms of size or their ratio to the overall IT organization, the PMO to the overall IT organization. Based on the composition by the roles that are within the PMO, project managers, analysts, administrative staff. By the skill sets or capabilities, project management, analysis, design, consulting, and by the depth of the staff as measured by certifications or experience. The level of dedicated resources also varies, as you've heard mentioned. Structure also depends upon the context, which includes things like the culture of IT in your organization and the organization itself, the organization's past experience with successes and failures with projects. And I'm from California State University, Fresno. The budget also matters. The organizational capacity can, and again, this is something we've had to do, can people be shifted into new roles or absorb new expectations? What's the organizational readiness in terms of your roadmap or your process maturity within the PMO? Are they ready for the next step? And also, in terms of structure, in terms of size and composition, does it fit the process maturity? Do you need to make some adjustments to fill in certain gaps? And what do you need to do next to move the PMO forward within your IT organization? Structure should be guided also by your strategy, by your service level expectations and the service components, and by your PMO program plan. Structure should also go beyond your PMO through embedded expertise and influence. We like to say that structure should achieve influence to scale, even if it doesn't necessarily directly scale. So one key note, or one way to one takeaway on this, is that structure, systems, and support infrastructure, your tools, they should fit the context, and they should help improve flow so that people can work better together to achieve expected outcomes. A couple of thoughts on systems and support infrastructure. First of all, systems are the things that are necessary to help people better work together to achieve outcomes. And a couple of things that are important. First, make sure you've got clear goals and that they're well-defined and communicated. And given that this is non-normal language for most folks, similar to service management, you're going to want to make sure you do the necessary education, the one-on-ones, to bring people up to speed, and that's an ongoing process we've discovered. It isn't something you do once and you go away and it's magically complete. You've got to have clearly defined guidelines or operating principles to set expectations for behavior and approaches. For example, who gets to request, approve, or prioritize a project? What criteria are used to prioritize projects? Or one we're moving towards is everyone should be able to see the portfolio of planned work, even within IT. Use some sort of plan, do, check, act-like approach to, so for example, collaborate, standardize, communicate, educate, assess, and then keep refining those operating principles and those goals. Processes should also fit the organization, the team, and the project, just like structure. Processes can vary in depth and complexity across institutions, as we've seen, and within the institution. I'll give you some examples. But you want to make sure you recognize those differences. Find the common denominators and support the variations. So you may have one group. In our campus, for example, we've got the LMS group that is very agile in their approach to making changes to the J2EE code. We've got people on the PeopleSoft side who are more heavy in the change management approach. And we've got people in the academic units who are more a consultative approach. But you want to make sure that you don't have systems that don't take those differences into account and find ways, though, to make sure people are able to work across those different areas. You'll have a good judge of the effectiveness of your systems by how well people are moving from and what was formerly siloed types of work or siloed types of activity towards seeing more synergy. And that's part of the excitement when you've got interdepartmental or interunit or work group projects and you start seeing that sort of thing happen or that sort of flow. Some brief things about support infrastructure. They say, you know, the fool with a tool is still a fool. Well, that's in this case also true. So you want to make sure you agree upon the basic containers that you're going to use, the taxonomy of what the contents are, what matters, what don't you track, what do you track, and that you've got behavioral expectations set, because it's amazing the sort of things that will drive conflict and get in the way of that flow that we have talked about. Again here, define, educate, and validate the consistent use of those tools. Tools, as you've seen, vary based upon the context, even within our organizations here, and even within our organizations themselves. So a couple examples of the tools are, we've got Microsoft Project, we've heard about SharePoint, Team Dynamics, QuickBase, ShareWell, and Jira, as some examples. The other thing that you're going to hear repeated is training, support, and continual influence around the use of those tools, the templates, methodologies, is critical for success and for people not having the tools get in the way. One last criteria that I've always used in different industries, and particularly apropos here, is that the value of the tool and it has to be greater than the cost of using the tool. So how light does light need to be? How heavy should heavy be? What's appropriate to manage risk? Again, but for the individual worker, it comes down to, am I getting more value from this than it's cost me to learn and keep using it? I'm going to pass this on to Robin now, and she's going to talk about what made a PMO successful.
Hi, everyone. My name is Robin Betts, and I am the director of the Project Management Office at Babson College, which is one of those schools that's in the small category. The PMO has been up and running now for 9 months to a year, so we're really kind of coming over one of these initial humps of getting things off the ground. So, as you've heard, everyone's in it for something different. Everyone's trying to achieve different goals. But I think what unifies all of us across the how to start a PMO problem is that we're introducing a major organizational change. You know, this may or may not be as major in some places, but ultimately, everybody comes into this trying to introduce some new processes, some new guidelines, some new way of operating, and there's a lot of tension around how to do that and what used to happen and what, you know, what needs to happen next. So with any organizational change, and in particular with this one, we found that there were some unifying factors that we all thought really seemed to support bringing this change onto campus. First thing is getting the organizational support. And I think, you know, we could probably all sound like broken records because that's how much we talked about this from preparing this presentation. In my case, the CIO was a real driver of the PMO. That was immensely helpful. He laid a lot of the groundwork for getting this message out and understanding how important it is for the rest of the organization to play. It's not just something that involves IT. Once that foundation was laid, it's really about knowing your mission and knowing how you can help other people. So what's your value proposition to the rest of the campus? What's your value proposition within IT? If you can't articulate that, you won't have a lot of credibility. You need to be able to tell people how you're going to help them. So, you know, for one example, at Babson, for a couple of months, I did what I called the PMO Roadshow. So I actually went out to a lot of different stakeholders at different levels, and I talked to them about what I was there to help them do. And I think that actually helped a lot. The other thing that we all have in common is that there are people involved in this process. And the staffing is something you find very different across all of our institutions, but that is a common thread. These are the people doing the work. These are the people doing the project management. Start slowly and meet people where they are. Again, this is, you know, find the things that work for your organization. Some of us started with PMPs. Other of us still don't have PMPs, the project management certified professionals. And, you know, we're all dealing with this in different ways. But you're not going to boil the ocean in the first month of the existence of your PMO. So it's really important to just pick your battles and understand where your people are and make sure that they can succeed in what you set out to do. The other piece, and you're hearing this a lot, is match the process to the institution. So this is really about, again, picking your battles, knowing what's going to work within your institution. A year in, we're still getting comfortable with the accountability piece of everybody having a schedule. You'd think that's a really basic thing. It's taken a long time to get there. We have different people within the organization. You know, we're kind of matrixed. We have some official project managers and then other subject matter experts that are developing project management skills as we go along. So they're coming up that curve with us. Okay, so in terms of key practices, again, we're all approaching this from a different place, but there were some unifying factors here. Introducing accountability, this is a tough one. This is pretty key. You know, you really need to get people to make schedules, follow them, go by your standards, whichever standards you decide are important to implement at that time. But getting those people to do it is hard. The change that it brings is hard. You know, now all of a sudden we have deadlines. Well, we didn't have deadlines before. How do we deal with deadlines, you know? Now I'm stressed because I have all this operational work to perform, and now I also have a deadline, and so there's this project manager breathing down my neck. But it's all about, you know, it's about general structure around projects, introducing weekly meetings, having project reviews, assigning staff to projects. Transparency in the portfolio. There's nothing better for accountability than letting everyone know what's going on. Process and planning. So this is about implementing the actual methodology. If you can get your tools and your templates out there faster rather than perfectly, it seems to work better for us. So that's what we've found. You could spend all day in your room figuring out the perfect project status update template, but get it out there, get people used to the idea, and refine as you go along. And then, of course, the recognition and reflection piece. This is important. Your people are the main portion of how this PMO gets off the ground. Recognize what they're doing. Make sure that you cut people some slack when you start to get off the ground. And celebrate what's working. You know, celebrate successes early and often. That's sort of a tenet of change management in general. That's really been key. It's also something that is hard to do sometimes. Key successes, so again, we're all in this for something different. We have a small list of things. This is just a few things that across different organizations we've found has worked. We now have some more structured planning. Hey, guess what? We actually have a project list. We know what the comprehensive list of projects is. Even though that doesn't seem like a big deal, that's a success. Understanding of the IT workload. Higher quality projects, that's kind of what we're in this for. And then we know it's working because the black hole is getting smaller and people aren't forgetting about as many things and people are actually asking for some of these planning mechanisms. At CMU, there's something called a Stripey sheet. It's become legendary to me. I'd like to start using it in my organization. And, you know, people are requesting services. Lest you think it's all rosy, we now wanted to have Duane come up and talk about the various challenges that you might face as well.
Thank you, Robin. My name is Duane Cable. I'm Vice President of IT for Pasadena City College in California. And prior to this, and when we actually put this presentation together, I was Vice President of IT for several years at Joliet Junior College in the Chicago suburbs. So which is primarily a big part of what this discussion is about in terms of where we, this is my, now at Pasadena will be my third PMO and creating a project management function and office. But are there challenges? Lots of them. And so let's talk about some of those. First and foremost, I think certainly getting executive buy-in, particularly in the IT leadership, and yes, I have seen operations where the CIO or the head of IT didn't really grasp the value of project management, and the PMO office and its function would struggle from there on. But it's not just the leadership of the IT organization, but it's also the leaders, the executives in, throughout the institution, because you're now affecting a lot of projects of which they have staff and operational personnel involved in those, and so getting them to buy in to the whole project management concept is pretty important. So if they're not on board, I think your PMO is going to struggle. If the IT staff, which is particularly this is going to be something new, they're not, if they don't embrace PM practices and methodologies, then the adoption becomes slow and the organization really never gets to reap the operational benefits of what true PM is all about. They spend most of the time struggling through the real development phase, which is really not the fun part, but it's when you actually start reaping the benefits and they say, oh, now I get it, why we're doing this, and I miss it when it stops. So that certainly is another challenge. And I think, you know, for the most part, when you look at having folks on board in terms of executive sponsorship and overall sponsorship, folks get the, you know, get it, and things go a lot better. Fear of change. We're introducing something new. Lots of challenges there. You know, I can't remember how many times I've heard, well, I'm just too busy to plan. Is this just another way to control me and what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis? And those kinds of things, they look at project management as a fairly skeptically in the beginning because they really don't understand project management and why it's important. You already heard some from some of the others in terms of some of the benefits that reap there once they get it. You really have, as the executive, you really have to continue, and as part of the PMO, the staff have to continue to sell project management at every meeting. It's not something that just happens periodically. It's every meeting you're talking about project management and why it's important. And so I would certainly suggest start with small steps. Like for instance, given the fact that skill sets were very low with respect to project management, we did something simple like just work breakdown structure. Just give me the 5 to 6 steps that it takes to get started. You'd be amazed how many start, oh, okay, I didn't think of that piece, and you start talking through those things, and I think that helps you to get through that fear of change. Training and professional development, a number of issues here. Certainly training is an ongoing process. On-site workshops, I rarely ever liked sending folks off. We always brought folks in, and we had the whole team together, and we would be able to listen to experts in the field. We also subscribe to computer-based training materials, and I'm a big believer in buying books. Hey, whether they read them or not is a different matter, but certainly I certainly try to encourage that as we go through. One of the things that we did at Joliet is we actually hired a PMP certified project manager as a consultant. We brought the expertise in, and I felt that rubbing shoulders every day of the week is the real way to really get into project management. Help them build the plan. Help them to understand the components of the plan. We did that actually for a year, and I know many of you are probably thinking, well, I just don't have the resources for that, but I think it was well worth the investment. And in fact, if I hadn't left, we would have actually went 2 full years with this consultant because I really, for us at Joliet, it really took a while to get up to speed in terms of the real functionality of project management. Another challenge is certainly defining what is a project and what's operational. I know some of you that have created offices, well, what constitutes a project and what's just day-to-day working business? So that's another challenge. Allocating time. You wouldn't believe the conversations we got into just talking about time and time issues. And so we tended to follow the 60-20-10-10 rule, which is 60, particularly for those outside of the help desk, because help desk deals with a lot of day-to-day areas, but the rest of the organization, 60% was devoted to project time. Don't schedule any more than 60% of your average week or month. 20% to operational issues, 10% for professional development. I do believe in professional development on the job and spending time doing that. And the other 10%, unfortunately, people do have to take vacations and be out sick and those kinds of things. So you need to map that. And talking through the staff, with the staff about doing that was part of the objectives. And each week we met. I was part of those meetings, and we talked about the entire portfolio, whether if they were green, we used multicolored sheets as well, if they were green, fine, but if they were yellow and reds, we spent a lot more time digging into various aspects of those particular projects. So that's part of training, and that's part of the coordination piece. Resource commitments, well, I did tell you ours with respect to actually bringing in a consultant, but it does take resources. It's not something that you just go at it half-heartedly. Now, I'm usually envious of some of the bigger institutions where they can actually have a project management staff of 3 to 4, 5 people or so, but most of us in the medium to small institutions, we had to borrow from within and pretty much work the matrix structure as was previously explained. But again, we structured our budget, everything based on projects. We moved our operational budget into a project budget, and part of the next steps was to actually start setting up project accounting, but never got there yet. Accountability and lessons learned. There is the annual review process. I think it's going to certainly be a challenge, particularly if you have unions to work with and various different associations. And be careful in terms of project teams, be careful of the 80-20 rule. 20% of the people do 80% of the work. Well, project teams, if they do self-evaluations and team evaluations, they'll let you know who's doing the work and who isn't. So it's part of what should be of your annual evaluation. And and one of the suggestions I would make in terms of improvements, ask each team member to actually suggest 2 ways that they could do the job they did better next time, and it gets a lot of things on the table. Last area in terms of recognition, we always tend to be so busy with projects, with 100 plus projects, that we rarely have time to actually do the recognition and the celebrations like we should. And I think that's going to continue to be a challenge for all of us. And with that, Jane.
Hello. My name is Jane Bouchand, and I'm from the University of Connecticut. And my colleagues today on this panel have really shared with you all of our collective wisdom and our experiences, and in areas of how to start a PMO, types of services and structures of a PMO, as well as some of the successes and challenges. I will now summarize our lessons learned and provide you with some valuable takeaways. So as PMO professionals at various stages in our careers, from a variety of different institutions, as we've explained, with multiple types of PMO structures and at different maturity levels, what advice do we have for you on your PMO journey? So as Dwayne mentioned, first and foremost, really it's very important to try to obtain support from leadership. That's one of the key areas, I think one of the key takeaways. And also to understand the purpose of your PMO. As we said before, it's much easier to gain support for your PMO if you know what you're trying to achieve and the value that the PMO will add to the organization. Get stakeholder involvement as well. Are there other project managers? Are there other areas and colleagues, folks that support this? Do they understand what it is you're trying to achieve, and will they support that with you? As someone said earlier, begin with the end in mind. The other thing is to determine value proposition and assess on a regular basis. As we noted before, what is it in it for them? That's what they want to know. and assess to make sure that the goals that we've created and the processes that we've created are still relevant and are still adding value. Evaluate some of your pain points and work to improve them. Develop project framework and templates and methodologies. Keep the project management visible and update the community on current projects. As Robin said, make your portfolio transparent. Also ensure that the staff are well-trained and certified in PM. So we mentioned training, and there are different ways in which to train. Training the whole IT staff, maybe just to understand some of the basic concepts of project management. Also having common language. Dwayne mentioned work breakdown structures, not only how to do them, but what do we mean when we say that? How do we define that? So working to make sure that everyone's on the same page. Looking at other PMO websites and networking with other folks in PMOs. Don't be afraid to borrow what makes sense out there. There's a lot of good resources out there, templates, methodologies, framework. Go out there and take a look and then adapt it to what your organization is like. Borrow ideas. We talked a little bit about tools, utilizing a common tool. We mentioned Team Dynamics and Microsoft Project, QuickBase. But the first thing you should understand is what is it that you want this tool to achieve? Are we looking for a resource tracking? There's tools out there that will do really good resource tracking. One of the things we wanted to do when we first started our PMO was to really get all in one place what the projects are. We talked about that. What are we working on? What are projects? We didn't really even have a good handle at the University of Connecticut of what all the projects were. So that was one of our first tasks, and to get that into some common database so that we can say, okay, here's what we're working on. Other people want it for other different reasons, you know, for resource tracking. And if you're doing resource tracking, then who would need to have access to this tool? Is this something we're going to roll out to the whole IT department? Or again, is it just tracking, and so is it just the PMO staff that will be working with this tool? So just defining that and then going out and seeking what meets the needs. Become members of PMI and EDUCAUSE, you know, and ensure that your staff are as well. Get grounded in good practices, and that, again, is assessment and talking to folks and looking at value and reassessing. And, you know, you may get all those frameworks and methodologies out there, and then, but you still need to tweak it. Talk to people. Is it working? Be patient. You know, as we said before, meet people where they are, and then be patient and help them grow to where we want them to be. It is a culture change for a lot of people. And we have to be patient and just continue to move them forward. Find out where they are at first. And then lastly, as we said, celebrate your successes early and often. It really does make a difference. So in conclusion, there is truly no definitive way in which to create and sustain an effective PMO. Therefore, our advice is to work towards structuring your PMO based on your organization. We have discovered that many paths can and will lead to success. So this concludes the panel presentations. We will now open it up to questions. But before we begin, I want to mention that our final slides will include resources to links of other project management offices, methodologies, templates, professional organizations, and blog roles. Thank you.
Okay, is this on? Is this on now? Okay, we have approximately 20 minutes, according to our convener here, and so we'd certainly be glad to entertain questions. We specifically tried to be very brief and allow for time for questions. So any questions? Great, it's all perfect, right?
I see one in the back.
If there's a microphone back there, if you don't mind.
And while we're getting set up, I'm just curious, how many of you have PMOs already?
Show of hands.
Outstanding.
All right, and how many of you are trying or starting, getting off the ground? Okay, so a fair number of you.
So for those who are listening, there were a lot of hands raised on both questions.
Yep.
So I was just kind of wondering in terms of a common approach or common experience between the panels about getting buy-in, did that include talking to, and how did you include talking to the stakeholders and potential stakeholders in terms of what a project is, what it looks like? How do you define that so that there's shared agreement towards it?
I can take that one. So in my PMO roadshow, I actually had all of those questions answered for people. So there was a group of people who determined what, say, the definition of a project was within IT. This was all sort of within the PMO foundation. And as I would go out to people to get their buy-in, you know, I wanted to let them know about what we had planned. So what is a project, right? How do you ask for work? Because ultimately what's in it for a lot of these stakeholders is, you know, I've asked IT 100 times for this thing, and no one ever tells me when it's going to be done. I don't even know if you remember it, you know. And so what was really clear about the value proposition that I could offer people is that we're going to have this list. You're going to get it publicly. Here's what's going to be on the list. Here's what's not going to be on the list. And at our college, a project is 40 hours of IT resource work or 10K or more out of somebody's budget or particularly high risk. That's just something we came up with. This is something that may change as we become more mature. But I could tell them very clearly what's going to be on that list. How are we going to interact, right? I go out to 10 different stakeholder groups regularly on a monthly basis to have this conversation with them about prioritization, about what projects there are. So I'm in constant contact with people, which really helps me to understand if my value proposition is coming to fruition for them, right? Does that answer your question?
Okay. Let me take it from within IT staff. We brought someone in to do project training for our projects for team members. Mm-hmm. His name is Payson Hall out of Sacramento, and he did some interactive games. And one of the neat things that occurs is people go, oh, I actually care about that. I just didn't realize I was getting, some of my behaviors were getting in the way of that being accomplished. Or, oh, I'm familiar with that, and now that I know the term for it, this isn't so different. So people use these skills on a regular basis in other parts of life, and sometimes they show up and forget about them, or things get in the way. So we did some internal training that helped people realize that these skills aren't so foreign and how to take and adopt them.
There was a question in the back.
I'll take a shot. I don't claim to be perfect at this at all. I think that transparency is incredibly useful in that. Mm-hmm. So the experience that we have is we started with really portfolio management and our process for getting projects onto the list, right? And we required a charter for everybody. They had to have a charter if they wanted to have their project. And then we had something called Coordinator for a Day, which was a meeting where we had all of our managers who were potentially project managers in the room together for half a day going through a list of all the charters. And this was how we were going to get people to comment on whether they thought that these charters, these projects, you know, listed the right resources and had everything together. And, you know, a manager would come across, you know, Joe Blow's charter that was very weak. And they'd go, man, I don't think very highly of Joe Blow in this charter. And I don't think very highly of this project. So I'm going to make sure that people don't think that way about me. And I'm going to make sure that my project charter the next time is going to look really good. Mm-hmm. And, oh, I don't know what to do. Maybe I'll go to the PPMO, you know, surreptitiously, hey, Kelly, can you tell me how do I do this charter better? And so then we would give them ideas and give them suggestions to offer to take a look at their charters and make them better. So transparency works wonders. Mm-hmm.
And I'll just quickly tack on to that. I have, you know, status reports. This is sort of, in a decentralized organization, one of the hardest things to get people to do, or at least we've found. And the way that I am working to get that to a better place is, you know, why do you do your status report? You're not just doing this to hand me a piece of paper. It's like Office Space, right? It was the movie with the reports that people had to file. You're doing it to do a personal check-in with your own project. Oh, and by the way, I have this executive project report that I'm sending to the CIO, who then sends it to the president. So guess what? If you don't hand me something, I have no way to communicate with other people about that project. And so the decentralized piece, it becomes about, you know, in essence, you become a reporter, even though you're also kind of accountable for what they're producing. Sometimes just reporting the accurate state of the matter is powerful.
Another mechanism, too, that we've used is that, I mean, it's part of our governance structure. We have an administrative technology advisory committee and a learning technology advisory committee, and any projects, per se, that were not instructional, they went through this administrative technology advisory committee, and they had all the charter, the background information, the total cost of ownership, a lot of the modifications, because there were some areas where they really wanted to go off on a tangent that really they shouldn't be doing. And someone had to get to a point where this committee would actually make a recommendation that goes forward or not go forward, and they actually participated in the process of prioritizing that. And that group reported to me, and my job as the vice president was to take it to senior leadership or cabinet, and it was discussed at cabinet amongst the group, and then a decision was made by that team. And that's how some of those issues got addressed, to bring in particularly what I would call rogue projects that really shouldn't be heading down those paths, particularly with very limited resources. Another question? Yes. Here.
When you're first trying to create a PMO office, how do you balance getting projects done with getting the framework and methodology in place?
Grab this.
Go ahead.
Well, at the University of Connecticut, we were fortunate that we had a PMO staff who weren't at that time not managing projects, so we could focus on that. Not everyone's going to have that luxury, of course, so that is a challenge. But I think, again, if you have support from leadership, they will allow you to maybe take some time and divert some of that work or put it on hold until you can get these things done, because it's very important to be able to have that framework and to know what the processes are, and then you can start modeling those processes as well. But yes, we had, you know, in some areas, and we were fortunate enough that was our main focus. To get the methodologies, the frameworks, and the templates created, and then train people on that.
And I'd just like to add, at the University of North Florida, we had very limited resources, so we developed our framework methodology and everything first, and then we kind of rolled it out into the training that went along with it.
And as I had indicated in my presentation, and we actually brought a consultant in that was very versed in all of this and versed in higher ed implementing project management, and putting those types of tools and things together really is a lot of work, and introducing it and taking it very slow into what you introduce as you move through this process is important too. That's why we at least went a year, and I was fully expected to go another full year with this person on site, just to really inculcate the whole PM process within the division.
I'd add one thing to that. Have a long-term view and be persistent and be gracious to yourself. The first thing I did when I got to campus I was supposed to start a PMO was, there's no budget for staff, and you're managing the overall phone switch for a large campus. But with spurts, we do now have staff, and we've got folks that are believing in the why it matters. So, yeah.
Sorry, just one more thing there too. I didn't do this, but I wish I had. So I'd love to tell you about this. Many people who start a project management office create their own project around building the project management office. So this is one way to be able to present, okay, what's the charter, right? This is a process definition
what's your own charter, what's your own mission, and then what's your schedule? When are you going to be creating these things? How are you going to be proceeding? And if you can do that, I think you get a better sense of how much time you're going to be able to spend in each place, and that will help you to plan.
District one, yes. Here.
Has any assessment been done?
I mean, normally when you get some resources, it's great. And if you need additional resources to really give the PMO office a good chance of staying, you know, in place, has any assessment been done in terms of when project management is being used? You showed either you saved money, you didn't use waste or squander resources, but I'm sure in the beginning when you go for these resources and you go to hire to the executives groups, they're like, well, show me where this is productive. And although I believe in it wholeheartedly, sometimes you need to show them the data.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a good point. I think it's really hard to come by because I think it was Robin who said PM is kind of like preventative medicine, right? If you do these processes beforehand, then your project is going to go more smoothly. But who can say that, you know, if you didn't, you know, if we didn't have these processes in place, it was going to blow up, you know, exactly how much it would go over, you know, how much money did we save by using project management? It's hard to say because it's preventative, you know, who knows what we avoided by thinking about it beforehand. So I think assessment is really difficult to do, and I wouldn't claim that we were very good at it at this point, and I think that's where kind of the executive buy-in and executive support really comes in. So I don't know if I have a good answer.
Right. Absolutely.
Yes.
I think the challenge. I think except for the Standish report that talks about project failures in a quantitative way, most organizations that aren't practicing effective project management don't have benchmarks about it. Mm-hmm. And so the challenge is after when you do it, you really only have qualitative and anecdotal evidence. And generally, from what I've gathered, and it's true in our organization, people will speak about the fact that they don't have the kind of risk they had before, that things aren't coming on time, that things aren't forgotten.
And I would say too, there are some intangibles buried in there that you could highlight as part of your PMO. One thing that we've found is that with the transparency portfolio, the transparency in the portfolio, people are actually choosing not to do work that they've asked for, or they're looking at the list and saying, "Oh, grad admissions is doing the same thing as you grad admissions. Why don't we partner?" So it's those kinds of things that aren't, you know, you actually could assign a dollar value to some of those things if you needed to, but it's about some of that foundational collaboration that starts to happen.
The most valuable assessment that I love getting is when the other vice presidents are saying, you know, one of the things we have noticed about IT is they no longer lose track of projects, they're getting things done on time, and I feel like my staff's needs are being met. And frankly, I don't care what that costs. If I can get that kind of evaluation, I'm feeling pretty good. Any other questions? Well, we certainly want to thank you, and please, just as a reminder about the evaluations.
And we also all have cards up here, and you're welcome to take one and get in touch with us if you have more questions down the road.